Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. I'll be with you here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major and minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have a question or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska, or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. A very interesting guest that's going to be with you here in just a few minutes on Alaska Gold Trails. But let's give you a couple of announcements, or at least one announcement, for all you gold miners out there that are interested in learning a little bit more on placer evaluation. We have a program coming up at the University of Alaska Mining Extension that is a placer exploration and evaluation workshop, which will be held on Saturday, January 21st. It will be an all-day session, and then there will be 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, January 23rd, 24th, and 25th, from 7 to 10 p.m. The workshop is designed to provide those interested in placer mining with a systematic approach to the prospecting, exploration, and evaluation of a placer property. And if you'd like to have more information regarding that particular short course or workshop, you can give me a call at 474-7702 or 456-2569. Once again, that's a placer evaluation workshop that's going to be held by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Extension Program. Their phone number is 474-7702 or 456-2569. And now let's do what we generally do about this time of day on a Thursday, and that, of course, is have our little contest. And today we're going to give away, let's rephrase that, Oxford Assaying and Refining is going to give away a 1 ounce silver ingot, a 1 ounce Oxford silver ingot, to the person who's going to help me out with an ad. And today I would like to know who these people are, where they're located, and what they do. And when I say what they do, I mean what do they do in detail. And for those of you who are ready to play our Alaska Gold Trails contest, the phone number that you might like to know is 452-6491. Who's located at 452-6491? We're going to take the third person to call us here with the answer and wants to do that ad for our sponsor, our good sponsor there at 452-6491. And our phone number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. So I'll take the third person. But just so that nobody is left out, Alaskan prospectors located at 504 College Road here in Fairbanks, Alaska, said that they had some beautiful little crystalline geodes that they will put in an attractive plastic container for view to the first two people that call regarding this contest. So let's go to the telephone lines and see if we can get some answers here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, am I the third caller?
You're the first caller, sir. Who is located at 452-6491?
That is B&L Pawn Shop.
That's B&L Pawn Shop, sir, and you know what you've just done? You've won yourself a crystalline geode from Alaskan Prospectors. All you have to do is just give me your first name and then drop on over to Alaskan Prospectors at 504 College Road and pick up your prize.
It's David.
David, thanks for the call, and I hope you enjoy the gift that you give.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, you're on the air. You're caller number two.
Yes, B&L Pawn.
B&L Pawn. And if you'll give me your first name, you can stop over to Alaskan Prospectors there at 504 College Road and pick up a crystalline geode. Hello? Yes?
Okay, Patty.
Patty? Okay, Patty. Thank you very much. By the way, Patty, you and David both might like to know that Alaskan Prospectors are on relatively restricted days now. They're open on Mondays from 9:30 till 5. Fridays and Saturdays, 9:30 till 5. So stop on over there, get your crystalline geode, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the call, Patty. Hi, you're on the air. You're caller number three.
All right.
All right, it's about time, huh?
Really?
Really?
It's B&L Pawn Shop. That's at 605 Gaffney on the corner of Cushman and Gaffney there, and that's the phone number that you asked who was at, which they have another phone number of 452-3063.
Oh, do they?
Yes.
Well, that's interesting to know. What are they, they're at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman?
Yes, sir.
And it's B&L Pawn Shop. Just exactly what do they do over at B&L?
Well, now I can tell you what they've done for me and what they do for other people. They sometimes pawn stuff to give you money to help you pay your bills when you can't make them. And then they have a lot of stuff that they sell very reasonably priced. I've bought several tools from them, and car tires. They have jewelry. They have sewing machines, violins, guitars, rifles, pistols, cameras, surveyors' equipment, generators. Gosh, it's all around kind of like a general store.
One-stop shopping, is that right?
One-stop shopping.
You bet. So if you need a grubstake, stop over at B&L.
That's right.
My friend, thank you very much. Why don't you give me your name, and we'll get you set up here.
Okay, my name is Everett.
Everett. And Everett, all you have to do is stop up here at Washington Plaza at the KFAR studio, pick up your certificate, then pop over there to Oxford Assaying and Refining, and they're located at 208 Wendell Street.
Correct.
And they will be happy to give you a one-ounce silver ingot. How's that?
Well, that sounds fantastic.
Everett, thanks for joining us here on Alaska Gold Trail.
Well, I like listening to your show.
Well, thanks a million.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, like we were saying a little earlier, we're here on Alaska Gold Trails today. My guest is Don Nelson. Hello, Don. Welcome to Alaska Gold Trails.
Good to join you here on the program, Jim. We appreciate the opportunity being with you and to participate in your program and see what you got to say.
Well, actually, it's not what I have to say, Don, so much as what you have to say. We're kind of interested in the time that a little bit about what happened to you before you came to Alaska, where you were born, and what kind of environment you were raised in. And then we're going to take it a step farther. What brought you to Alaska? What was that magnet that drew you up here to the cold, frozen North Country? And what are the activities that you have participated in since you came to Alaska?
First off, born and raised in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Big city, really. Most of my younger life was spent in the city, right in the middle of the city, 1636 Hillside Avenue North, North Minneapolis. And, of course, went to the schools in the area and so forth. And for many years, just was involved in school and so forth. And then, of course, during my training or vocational training, I worked for the National Youth Administration training for maintenance and rebuilding of aircraft. And it was during that period of time that Northwest Airlines hired me to work up on the Alaskan Highway, the construction of the highway. That was in the early days. And that was back in 1942. So I took the job with Northwest, servicing aircraft that were hauling supplies in to the construction of the Alaskan Highway. Of course, I was in Edmonton at first, and then because of deferment ran out and I had to renew it, and they wouldn't because I was in Edmonton, they suggested I move further north. So I went to Fort Nelson. 300 miles up on the Alaskan Highway, and there I serviced the aircraft. We're hauling supplies in the Lend-Lease aircraft going to Russia. And the temperature started going down in the fall of the year, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 below zero. And being in those days, I wasn't in the Christian realm, as it were. I was just plain old heathen up there having a time. And I told them to take that job and do something with it that I won't repeat. And so I quit my job up there, lost my deferment. But I was a pretty good mechanic. So when I got back to Minneapolis, because I was a good mechanic, I had opportunity to take another job with another deferment that was over in California. I went to the Richmond Shipyards, worked there for about 3 months, and I was inside working on the steam turbines and all that. And it was too noisy down there with all those riveters and chippers and welders and everything. And I told them to do it, the job the same as they did up north. I didn't like the cold.
I didn't like it inside a ship either.
And so I went back home. Of course, there was no more deferments. That's how I got in the military. But it was that occasion of working up on the Alaskan Highway back in 1950 that put a hook in my jaw for the ministry. In the meantime, I'd had an experience with the Lord in a church in Minneapolis where a sinner was turned to a saint, believe me. I want you to know it was that great a transition situation. And in that church, there was a strong emphasis placed on ministry and missions. So I began to wonder about the North. And so on one occasion, back in 1951, I drove to Alaska as far as Northway. And the only reason we stopped at Northway, we ran out of money. And so we went back, and I thought, well, boy, that's tough. It's still just as rough up there as it ever was. So back in 1956, I had been attending Bible college and so forth, and it was during those times, I believe, God spoke to my heart to come back up. 55, I came back up and got as far as Central Alaska. The road was washed out, so I couldn't get to Circle, so we visited Central Fairbanks and went back home and decided then to come back to Alaska. And, of course, come back in 56 as a missionary. The call of God brought me back to Alaska, not the cold weather or anything else. Because if I went by the cold weather, I'd have went to Florida or Phoenix or someplace like that.
Don, what did you think of the towns after you entered Alaska? What did you think of the towns that you came into contact with, places like North Pole, Fairbanks, Central?
Well, when I went through North Pole the first time, there was no gravel, there was no pavement at all. In fact, there was very little gravel. The first night I spent at North Pole in 1956 when we moved up, I spent on the only gravel driveway in North Pole. They just started putting them in that spring, and that was the first one they had put in. Can you imagine that? The road was, the Alaskan Highway was gravel, but no other roads or driveways were, just the roads. And so I pulled up on the road, and this fellow had just put his driveway in, and I was stuck. And he said, come on over and use my driveway. So I used the first gravel driveway in the city of North Pole in 1956 and stayed there for a whole week. And by the way, backing my trailer into that guy's driveway, I tore it all up, you know, how it would be, fresh gravel. But I finally got backed in there and was out of the mud and thanked God for that gravel driveway. That was back when it was rough.
That was a great experience for you.
Oh, yeah.
I lived in Fairbanks about that same period of time and recall some of the same characteristics that you're describing here.
Well, you remember downtown Fairbanks.
There was only one paved street, man. That's right. One paved street. The paved street was 2nd Avenue.
Yep.
And then it was paved. Cushman was paved when I was here, clear up to Gaffney.
Oh, yeah. All the way. Oh, all the way, everywhere.
Ruts and all. And then we didn't fix that too much. At any rate, tell us, when you came here, you were in the ministry. When you came here, did you have a church? Were you a minister? Did you pound the pulpit? What did you do?
No, I was just a plain old worker. I was ordained at the time, but I wasn't in the pulpit because I had no pulpit. So I actually went to work for two different churches. I went to work for the Pentecostal Holiness Church and for the Assemblies of God. I was a member of neither one of those groups or congregation. It just was a place to serve the Lord. I was a custodian for the Pentecostal Holiness and a carpenter for the Assemblies of God. And that's how I got to Stevens Village in 1956. The presbyter, B.P. Wilson, knew I was a carpenter, and I had a gained a reputation in the short time I was here, a pretty good carpenter. So he said, would I go to Stevens Village and work on a building over there, a cabin that they had just purchased, and they wanted to prepare it so he could go in there in the wintertime and hold services and have a comfortable place. So I went over there with my wife and daughter, and there we got a hold of that cabin and refurbished it, and it was a mess, believe me. It hadn't been used, the windows were out, it was a hopeless mess. But I never knew log cabins, I knew nothing about them. But the Indians over there, the native folks, really helped me and taught me, and so I refurbished that cabin, never dreaming that I would spend the first winter there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know the plan of B.P. Wilson. He knew that if I got into that village, that God would put a hook in my jaw and bring me back, and that just exactly happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent almost 8 years in that village as a missionary. Then I was in the ministry, okay?
He flew you out there, did he?
He flew us out there in a little old Piper Pacer. It was just a tail dragger that had patches all over it. And when you looked at it, you wondered whether you should junk it or use it. You know, just unreal.
It was quite an event for you.
Well, that was back in those days when airplanes weren't as sophisticated as they are today, and they were true Bush airplanes back then. And we kept them flying by gum and wire and patches and tape and so forth. And that's basically why that plane, I got a picture of that. When you look at it, you say, you mean you got in that thing to fly? You know, yeah, we did. Don't put the whole family in there at one time, you know.
My goodness.
I don't think there was a dime's worth of insurance. We didn't worry about it back then.
Would you do that again? Would you put the whole family?
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
All right. Hey, you know what? I want to take a moment out for a few messages for our listening audience. One of the important messages that I want to give the listening audience is regarding Don Nelson being here on Alaska Gold Trails, and that our number here is 479-8255. That's 479-TALK if you want to ask Don a question or something of that nature. Maybe give us a little bit of information regarding some of the stories that Don is telling. Well, we would like to hear from you, so give us a call. Once again, the number is 479-8255. Also, I want to talk about our good friends over at Gabe's Truck and Auto, where my vehicle is currently being repaired. And I'd like to point out that whether it's a auto or a light truck, motorhome, or even a big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And I'd like to also point out that that's not just my opinion. A lot of people here in Fairbanks, especially the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce a couple of years ago, gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raving About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has 2 large shops and 8 mechanics on hand to serve you. And you know, folks, with that much attention, you're going to get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a hurry. In addition to engine and general vehicle maintenance, Gabe's can also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. New and rebuilt engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. As you can see, Gabe's is a one-stop service center. And if you need an IM inspection, you'll love this. Gabe's has a no-pass, no-pay policy. And fact of the matter is, as far as I know, they are the people who originated that no-pass, no-pay policy. That's right. If you don't pass, you don't pay at Gabe's. And don't forget Gabe's towing service. He has 3 wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. And as a matter of fact, I've told you many times that I've got that number written down and I placed it in my glove compartment in case I run into a little bad weather and happen to slide off the road. I can reach in there, grab that number, and get to a phone and call them, 456-6156, and they'll be right out to give you that help that you need so desperately at that moment. So you can turn your rag into a ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. One of my guests at one time gave us the actual street number. It's 2058 Donald Road. That's out by Metro Field. Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off of Van Horn on Donald Road near Metro Field, or give them a call at 456-6156. And please don't forget to tell them that you heard about them from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails.
By now, you've probably heard of University Resume Service Alaska. Hi, I'm Phil Deischer, owner of University Resume. University Resume Service has been producing custom resumes in Fairbanks for 8 years. We are a professional writing business, and we have helped literally hundreds of people from every trade and profession sell themselves on paper. Professional writing is more than just typing. Indeed, professional writing is a unique skill, the way every profession is unique. Professional writing applied to your resume can give you the edge in landing the interview, which could lead to the job you want. A resume, which has numerous uses, usually takes about 2 hours to write. No more struggling over how to sell yourself on paper. In 2 hours or less, University Resume can have you armed with a custom resume and seeking the job you need for the career you want. For any kind of career writing, from resumes to loan applications, federal form SF-171 federal and state applications, call University Resume Service Alaska at 479-5747. For all types of professional writing, we're in the yellow pages under resumes.
Listen, listen, folks. You're listening to Alaska Gold Trails here on KFAR 660 on your radio dial in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm Jim Madonna. Our guest today is Don Nelson. He's telling us some of his history about entering the state. And if you have a question for Don, the number here is 479-8255. Give us a call. Don, you're out at Stevens Village. You came back and
decided to move back into the village. You know, there was an old trader back there that was involved in mining, and he was running the trading post, mining and trapping, and he used to tell us some of those stories about those miners that trudged the hills back there near Rampart and Doll Mountain, and we got some interesting stories from them areas back there about the mining industry. And of course, there is a lot of mining going on over in the Manly Hot Springs and Rampart area, back of Rampart. And so there was a lot of interesting information that we used to sit and listen to on those cold winter nights in those small little trading post on the banks of the Yukon. He used to have an old gas lamp hanging in the ceiling, and he had a kind of a strange little stove that he used to chuck wood into, and he had a glass eye. Sometimes that glass eye wasn't put in right, so you'd just see all white, you know. And I'd come in and I'd tell him, Hugh McGuire, you got your eye in backwards. And he had it that way all day, you know, and he'd go and he'd adjust it, and then he'd sit down and, oh, let me tell you some stories, you know, and the way we'd go. And then late at night, he'd finally close the trading post, and I'd go home, maybe get a little cold at 60, 70 below, and he'd chunk a few pieces of wood in there, warm it up in the trading post, and then on he'd go with some more stories of the interior of Alaska, and particularly trapping and mining. He used to love to tell stories about that. And so we are familiar with the mining industry and trapping because of the involvement we had with a number of the miners and folks that live back there. Heine Carson, for example, up at 101 on the Stees Highway, and others that we know that are back there even yet today mining. And we enjoy being with them. We enjoy visiting their mines and involving ourselves with them. And of course, some of them are our personal friends up there in the Circle Central area. Even today, I was with them last weekend up there. So we have been quite close to the mining industry. Joe Vogler has been very close to it.
I had the enjoyment of introducing Peggy Karsten as Mining Woman of the Year here a couple of years ago, along with Alaska Women in Mining's Chautauqua festivities. And Peggy and I got acquainted at that time, and she has had quite a life here in Alaska, and she related that to us.
First time I ever mined for gold and panned for gold was up there at 101, and I just enjoyed it. Still got that ounce of gold. I gave it to my brother, and he made some kind of a piece of jewelry out of it. I think he put it in a ring.
Uh-huh.
The whole ounce in a ring.
The whole ounce in a ring.
It really made a big ring, but it was beautiful. I got some. They were nice little nuggets, you know.
Uh-huh.
Got it from Heine Carsten.
Have you ever mined gold anyplace else?
Well, just fooled around, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't try any of that mining up at Fort Yukon. You remember the great Fort Yukon gold rush?
Oh, the fish wheel event.
Yeah,
yeah, well, I
was around then, you know.
Yeah, you've traveled to a lot of the villages around the state of Alaska with your work. Name a few of the villages that you've visited and lived in during your period here in Alaska.
Well, we visited or lived in Rampart, Stevens Village, Beaver, Chelkitsik, Fort Yukon, Venati, Arctic Village, then, of course, Circle and the central area. And then, of course, we've been over in the Northwest Territory of Canada. We've been in Old Crow in the Yukon Territory, then in Iqaluit in the Yukon Territory, then over to the Northwest Territory in Inuvik. And then we've been up to Tuktoyaktuk in the Northwest Territory. Then, of course, Northern Alaska, Barter Island and Etovik and Katovik and then Barrow And we've been places like that. We've been in a lot of places in Alaska. Then I'm heading south, you know, down in the Glen Allen area. We've been down in that part of the country, Northway and Tanacross and places like that. And, of course, then down in the Dot Lake area, we've been in that part of the country with services and worked with missions. We give away toys at Christmas time. So our involvement has been quite an extensive involvement in the interior and then to the east and north of Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. And how about you've given us one of your stories about the talking about some of the activities of the old timers that you ran into. And now these were really the old timers.
They were old timers when I was a long time ago. That's mm-hmm. 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And so they were old then. So uh-huh. they were 35, 40 years, 50 years in Alaska when I was with them 30 years ago. So uh-huh. that's 70, 75 years ago when they came, 80 years ago. And uh-huh. so some of them were very active in mining. I remember one time at Cantwell. I was there at Cantwell looking at a mission. The mission belonged to another denomination. We're considering selling it, and we were considering taking it over and operating it as a mission again. So my wife and I boarded the train, which was the only way to get to Cantwell at that time. We went down there and stayed in the building, and we were there for only overnight and coming back on the train the next day, spending about 24 hours in the village looking over. Something happened. Back in them
tell
days,
us,
it
Don,
wasn't strange.
Us.
The train had an accident and blocked the tracks.
No.
Almost 4 days we were stuck in the village. Well, we didn't mind because there was a little trading post there and that. And by the way, the miner ran the trading post. And so we'd go down and yuck with the people in the village, talk with them at night. And it was one of those occasions that I went down to Wes, and he's a very old man at the time. And he was a miner, and I can remember him putting, I've said, if I was ever tested to find out if I was real, that was the test, because he brought out fruit jars full of gold. I'm not talking about little bottles, I'm talking about fruit jars. And they weren't just a little bit in the bottom of various kinds of gold. They were fines and some coarse in some of the jars, but they were mixed between some were fines and some were coarse, but jars of it, you know, and they were heavy, you know. You can imagine what a fruit jar of gold weighs. And he was showing it to us, and he was handling one, and he handed it over to me, and I looked at it, and he said, you know something, I'm a very, very old man. You can see I'm kind of crippled up, and I would have difficulty defending myself, and nobody knows I got this gold. You could either hit me on the head and take it, or you could just walk off with it. How could I stop you? Here you have all this gold, and I can't remember the exact words that he said, because I must confess it kind of shocked me, you know, because I said, I wonder what made him think I would be tempted, is what kept crossing my mind. What did I say or do that would make him think that I would even want to do that, you know? But I believe he was trying to find out if this preacher, missionary, was real. And so he said, there it is. It's yours if you want to pick it up and walk off. How could I prove you did it? Nobody even really knows I've got it. And so I thought that was a test of tests. And I looked at it and saw that it was beautiful. You know how a fruit jar of gold nuggets would look like, or fines. And I don't know which was fine or coarse, but I knew some were larger than others. And I didn't know much about mining back in them days, so I was just pondering what all this was all about, you know. But I put her back down again and left him. I don't know whoever got that gold. You know, it's an interesting sidelight. I've never heard of any great amount of gold in that area that came out of there as a result of someone passing away. I wonder if somebody did get that gold.
Well, Don, you know, it might have been interesting to you to see all those fruit jars full of gold, but I don't even think it was a test.
No.
Not at all.
No, I had another one like similar to that right here in town.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. And I saw gold by the jars full that time, too.
Was that a test, or was it
No,
just,
no. That was just a person who knew me and showed me. They had one of them new machines that turns, you know, and mm-hmm. it sorts it. What are they?
Concentrating wheel?
Yeah, mm-hmm. whatever it is. I don't understand all that, but uh-huh. it was turning and making the little nuggets come out the other end, you know, and man, it was a lot of them.
Yeah, it follows right up there. Isn't that impressive to see that gold just draw right up into that chute?
Oh, I've seen a lot of that take place. I remember one time up in the central area, I was with Warren, and he was separating gold mm-hmm. or
on Crooked Creek.
Yeah, he was taking it out of the sluice, you know, to come in and the concentrate, you know, and he was bringing it out of the mud and gunk, you know, and I watched the boy. I tell you, that can be really beautiful to see still show up. Boy, a beautiful sight. Particularly when you all of a sudden spot a couple of big nuggets, you know, and that's really nice. Well, anyway, we appreciate the opportunity of being with those miners, and we've done some programming on it. In fact, we're putting together a videotape of the Steves Highway, and it's going to incorporate some of the mines up there. You'll go up the highway from the Fairbanks area, go by the big dredge out there at Chattanooga, and then you'll pick on some of the mines at 101 down there in the valley, and then we'll go on into a mine and show a whole mining operation, then go on up to Central, and we'll go through the museum, show some shots of the museum. That's got a, if you want to see the early mining, some of the equipment, the cats and the steam engines and all those good things that you can see from the past, you can go on up there to Central. And they have a museum up there that the folks in that area put together. And if you want to see the mining, and it's really old, historic museum-type situation, they've put a road back next to the creek there, and they set some of the old pieces of equipment back in there, and you can really get an insight to the massive pieces of equipment they had that weren't the D8, but they did the job of a D8, and to see how they put together a steam engine cat, or you know, how they, all the buckets and that, the cabling, and where they picked up the dirt and brought it out, and it's really something to see. Then inside, you see a lot of the personal effects, the smaller items, and a little cabin of a miner, you know, and all the things that were in there, and the maps and so forth. And then, of course, you can see some of the early day maps of the mapping of the claims around the country. And so it's a very informative mine. I'm putting a plug in for them, if you don't mind. They don't make any money on it. It's just a, it's a public service. You go in there free of charge, you sign your name. They have a little curio shop in there. They send sell some books and that. But other than that, it's free, and you just go in and enjoy. Boy, you can spend a half a day in that museum looking at all the different things that they've accumulated there from the various mines in the area. Some of the miners have been very gracious and given some interesting museum pieces that give you real, like I said, a real insight to how difficult it must have been in those days of mining back there.
They can tell you, the people who run the museum up there, I might add, can also tell you some colorful stories about the history of the Central and Circle Mining District.
Well, that's going to be on our video, too.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go on up to the Hot Springs and then on up to Circle. So it'll incorporate more things in the mining, but that'll be one of the prime targets of the video.
Well, you mentioned a little earlier that you met Hugh up there at Stevens Village.
Yes, Hugh McGuire.
Yeah, Hugh McGuire, and that he would sit down at nighttime and tell you some stories that were particularly fascinating to you. Don, do you have any other you'd like to relate to us, or any other story? I recall you telling me a story about a fellow who had collected some gold on some stream near the Colville River area not too long ago. What was that? What was that story all about? The kind of the hidden treasure story.
There are a lot of so-called hidden treasures up there, a lot of stories about gold that hasn't been retrieved that was discovered by someone. And I don't know which particular story you're making reference to, but Purgatory is probably the best story, and the two gentlemen that were trappers and miners there that ran that, two brothers. And they pulled a trick one time on the folks that were on the steamer. You know, they used to have the old stern wheel come through there. Mm-hmm. And so they, back in the woods, now this is a true story. The old Hugh McGuire told me this one. And back in the woods, they looked like they dug a grave, you know. And they had it mounted up like a grave with a cross on the end of it with a headstone. And the headstone was made out of wood, you know. Said, here lies the thief and the robber. He's learnt his lesson. His dues have been paid. His grave is here to identify his thievery. And so the tourists got off the boat, you know, and were walking around, and some of them wandered back that trail and saw that grave back there and said, he murdered somebody and buried him. It was the regular size of a grave, see? And so they went up to Fort Yukon, and they got the marshal up there, or whoever was up there, and back down the river they came, you know, and come in there, and they're investigating this so-called murder that the tourist had reported. And so they went back there and they dug up that crazy grave, and what was in there was the bird, the camp robber.
So
You can imagine the embarrassment when they dig it up. And there he was. He was a robber, a thief, you know, how a camp robber is. But those are stories that old Hugh McGuire would tell us, you know. And there was, some of them were true, too. Some of them very true.
Let me give the folks out there a message or two, and then we'll get right back with you. And I'd like to hear a few more stories. One of the messages we certainly want to let the listening audience know about is, of course, that we're here with Don Nelson. If you'd like to call Don, the number is 479-8255, and we'll look forward to hearing from you.
Hub Distribution Center, doing business as Northland Hub Liquor Store, located at 950 Aurora Drive, Fairbanks, Alaska, is applying for transfer of a package store license number 0781, liquor license, to Gary Shirley, doing business as the Klondike Liquor, located at 3505 Airport Road, Fairbanks, Alaska. Interested persons should submit written comment to their local governing body, the applicant, and to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board at 550 West 7th Avenue, Anchorage, 99501.
The time-honored adage in business is that the three most important ingredients for success are location, location, location. And right now, Tom Roberts Realty, your Fairbanks commercial property specialists, have some exciting opportunities available in the Washington Plaza, right on Airport Road, between the Center and the University Center Shopping Mall, with monthly lease rates for this Class A retail and office space as low as $372 a month. Call Tom Roberts Realty, your exclusive agents for Washington Plaza, at 452-2435.
Welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. You're
good
on the air.
Good afternoon, Jim.
Hi there.
I've got a question there for the good river.
Okay, let's hear it.
I wonder if he perchance met, would have been a young man about those days, I imagine 30 years old, a fellow by the name of John W. Holland.
Holland.
He was about 6'4", red-headed, feet about a yard long. And he was a cook and mess sergeant on the Alcon in the building of it. Went from day one to the last day of the highway.
No, most of the sites that I was on the Alaskan Highway were operated by the military. In fact, we ate with the military mess. They used their mess halls.
What John was.
He was. Then I probably could have met him.
He was a military mess sergeant.
Okay, yeah.
Well, big ornery dude. You're talking about those ornery dudes. You should have met him.
Yeah, probably. There, in our travels on the highway, we could have bumped into him because my problem back in those days was I loved to eat, so I was in the line and stayed long, you know.
You had to know him then.
Yeah. That was an interesting crowd up there.
I'll bet it.
It was a rough crowd too. You know, the fellows had to be to endure the cold and and the conditions that prevail there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we lived in tents. You know, that was tough, man. That was rough.
That was doing it the easy way.
Yeah.
Just before you fellows did that, I spent a winter up in northern Wisconsin in tents.
Oh boy, that's tough.
CC boy.
The coldest I've ever been in a tent is 50 below, and that was over in the Northwest Territory of the Reindeer Herd Station.
Uh-huh.
And we went out on one of, you know, those reindeer herders, they live right out with the herd.
Uh-huh.
And their tent city, as we would call it, they don't call it a tent city, they moves right along with the herd. So when the herd moves, they pick up the tents and go to the next area and set up their tents again. And I was in one of those tents and lived there for a while. Well, it got down to 50 below zero, and it's really cold.
Right underneath the stove, huh?
Well, I was in my sleeping bag right next to the stove. It's cold.
Okay, well, I wish you'd have known that, dude. I'd like to talk to you about it.
Well, I wish I would have, too. Sorry for that.
Talk to you later, then.
Yeah, bless you.
Thank you for the call, sir.
You betcha.
Hi, you're on the air with Don Nelson here.
Yeah, Don, I was wondering...
Can you speak up a little bit, please?
Pardon?
Can you speak up just a little, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was wondering... The other guy was asking you if you know about people you may have met. If you ever met a guy up around Livengood, Manly, or Rampart area by the name of Red Anderson.
Red Anderson. I've known several fellows by the name of Red. Two or three of them up in that country that were, but I don't know. Remember the last names.
Yeah.
You know, you meet a fellow and call him by his first name mostly. But no, not to identify Red Anderson. No, what did he do?
Oh, he was a miner up there.
Yeah.
He come up in the country around 1902, I believe, was mining up around mostly around the Livengood area, and he'd get into Rampart.
And some of them fellows in Rampart I got to know as I was in there for services, you know.
Uh-huh.
But to identify them, I don't know, you know, that's tough. But we were up there, and we did get involved with some of those fellas, some of the traders mostly, in that area. Sorry for that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yep. Thank you for the call. Don, you've talked about precious metals and things. We've got some folks here in town called the precious metals people, Oxford Assaying Refining. Are you familiar with them at all?
Oh, I'm familiar with them because I've been doing business with them. What happened is somebody gave me 100 ounces of Polar Mining with Don Mays. Gold in Alaska contains quite a bit of silver. And so when they smelt it out, they get a silver bar with a lot of gold bar, however, you know. And so he was on television with me one night and handed me as a gift 100 ounces of silver. But he asked me to keep it until the price of silver went up. Well, I don't want to have 100 ounces of gold hanging around my neck. So I said, Don, can I do something with that silver that would be the equivalent of getting more money for it? So I got all inspired to go down to Oxford and traded it in for ingots and
some of the
coins,
Oxford,
you know.
Oxford ingots?
Yeah. So I got a bunch of them, and I sold them for $15 a piece in the States down there, and, you know, I got $15 an ounce. Yeah,
well,
you understand.
Capitalistic, isn't it?
Well, you call it what you want. I made money for the mission, and that's what I was after.
Buy more Bibles.
Yeah, buy more Bibles. So that's exactly what I did it for. Yeah. And so I actually got up to $15. Why? No, I've got to correct that. Because some people that got some of those ingots and coins gave me a check as an offering. So I remember one time got $100, and all they took is 1 ounce of silver. So that particular occasion, I got $100 for an ounce of silver. So that's how I worked around that. And Oxford's been very gracious to give me those little sealed units and all those things. And so I've been going on. Now I'm using the profit made. I've paid back the money for the price of the silver. Now I'm using that profit that I made to go on with that, because I found there in the States, people like that little ingot that's got Alaska on it in big letters.
Exactly.
1 ounce of silver for $10, they go just, man, I can haul them.
They're beautiful, aren't they?
I have trouble keeping up because people look at me and say, oh, isn't that beautiful? That's real silver? And I say, all I want is $10. You know, what did I pay for it? The price of silver.
See? Sure.
So I still make a couple dollars for the mission, and it leaves behind something to remind them of us.
It has the state of Alaska on one side. What's on the other? A flag?
Nothing.
A flag?
You can engrave it on the back.
I thought it had the stars of the
planet. Yeah, I think
one
it does.
Of them
but
might have
one of them has
a variety
the,
of
the smaller one has it just says Oxford on it. That's got a flag on it. I think the other one's blank, so you can engrave someone's name. I'm going to try to figure out how I could imprint KJNP on it and then leave them as souvenirs, you know.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I don't know how to figure it. I haven't figured that one out yet, but they go real good with that Alaska on them.
Yeah, and besides that, they're beautiful gifts, don't you think?
Oh, I do. I really think so. That's what most people bought them for. That's why I got rid of so many at Christmas time. People bought 6, 7, 8 of them and then gave them as gifts to their friends and loved ones. And, of course, it's a savings, too, you know.
I'd like to point out to the listening audience that Oxford Assaying is located at 208 Wendell Street. And their quote line is 452-7858. For those people who wish to find out the price of gold, silver, and platinum each day, call their quote line. In addition to that, if you just have a question that needs to be answered, their regular office phone is 456-3967. And if you give them a call, I guess you can tell them that you heard about them from Jim and Don here on Alaska Gold Trails. How's that?
Yeah.
Hey, Don, let's get back to another one of those stories that or experiences that you've had and some of the stories that's fallen out from those experiences. You got another one for us?
Well, we could go on all day with stories.
Oh, just
because
it's a short one, Don. Come on.
we've had all kinds of experiences flying, and of course, in the ministry, you involve yourself with people, and when you involve yourself with people, you have a lot of stories to tell. Go ahead.
Sure. Let's take a
suit. I think we've...
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, on the air?
Yes, you are.
Reverend Don Nelson?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my gosh.
If you could speak up just a little bit, please.
Can I ask him a question that he doesn't have to answer?
Go ahead.
How many times does a person have to be thrown in jail before they decide to become a reverend?
Oh, well, I didn't get thrown in jail, but I was a prisoner of war. But that ain't what caused me to to turn to the Lord. That was a strange part. You know, a lot of people thought my experience in deep religious experience came through my experience of being shot down. I must confess, that almost turned me into an atheist, because I looked at it from the wrong standpoint. I said, well, how come God would let this to happen to people, you understand? So it kind of turned me off to the church and to things of God. So I had a real problem overcoming that to get back to the Lord, you know, to get to the Lord. So my experience came after years of drinking and carousing, and then finally one day I went to a church and a preacher preached and I got saved. Praise God.
I'm using somebody else's telephone line, and MUS tells me that a private line is one that is less than 12 people hooked to it, so I'm going to have to hang up.
Okay, don't use too much of your time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for the call. Say, Don, do you know my friends at Hector's Welding out there at North Pole?
Well, they've been our neighbor before they moved and after they moved. So.
Is that right?
Yeah, so we've known them a long time when they're on the old Richardson Highway. Now, of course, they have a big complex out there. I'm usually nosy, if you want to use that expression, because in the yard sometime we'll sit some of them big sluice boxes they've made and all them
trommels?
Trommels.
Sure,
and
screening plants.
So you see some. Boy, I tell you, I wonder, you know, you see that operation out there and you wonder, how on earth did they put that huge, monstrous thing together? They got it on a big, flat, big truck extended thing, you know. And
you probably saw the one that they built for Polar Mining.
Yeah.
Oh, that was tremendous.
Oh,
you know,
tremendous.
Beautiful plant.
Then, of course, I believe a couple of them went up to Steve's Highway. I've seen him going with the... He always puts Hector on the side of it, so you can identify
sure.
it as it's being drug across the country. You can know that
Hector, rusty paint color that his primer that
yeah,
he puts on here, too.
He's got a primer that is different.
Uh-huh.
That don't make it very colorful, but very serviceable.
You bet.
And they do a fine job of working in the mining industry, building specialized equipment, not just the norm. They build it according to your specifications, and it does the job for you, and it's uniquely built by Hector.
You can see them just off the highway there. They're located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway.
I wonder how many pieces of equipment they've built for mining and all the different configurations.
You go up to any of these mines, and it's always Hector's sluice box. You can find them here. You can find them in Canada. You can find probably in the lower 48, you'll find Hector sluice boxes being used as the processing equipment in the placer mining industry. They've just had a tremendous impact. And what we're proud about here is the fact that Hector's is a Fairbanks manufacturer. And
No. North Pole.
Oh, excuse me. Interior Alaska, man. Sorry about that, Doc. Didn't mean to steal the credit
from
you.
No, don't you do that to
but
it. Hector's North Pole. I'm sorry, but you aren't going to rob us.
I see. Well, at any rate, now I stand corrected. Hector's out at North Pole is an interior Alaska manufacturer who is helping the economy of the area. Anyway, if you want to find out more about Hector's sluice boxes and other mining equipment that they manufacture, give them a call. Their number is 488-6432, and we're proud to have them as one of the sponsors on Alaska Gold Trails. And they are from North Pole. Keep that in mind.
On an individual basis, I'd like to go out with one of those new electronic devices what we always discuss on television that tempts me to get out on those tailing piles with a new metal detector, you know, one of the new sophisticated kind that can separate the gold from iron. And I, oh, man, that's my...
You
I have
want
to
one of,
get
you
thee
want
behind me, electronic device.
Leah, you've almost got Leah convinced that Alaska Prospector's convinced to put one on loan to you.
I think
so
you should. I really think you should.
Don.
And I'd go out and test it for you and prove it on the field, you know.
Would you give us a recommendation?
Right.
You bet.
Nice to have been with you, Jim.
Hey, Don, it's been nice having you here on Alaska Gold Trails. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks, folks, for listening to Alaska Gold Trails. Next week's guest will be Urban Rahoy. And until then, right here at 1 o'clock, thanks for listening. You're now listening to KFAR Radio 660 on your radio dial in Fairbanks, Alaska.